Welcome one and all once again to Nerds on the Rocks. This week I am joined by Kyle.
Hello, I am back.
And Dan.
The third.
Alright, I was trying to be nice because you said you didn't like
No, I've fully embraced it. Dan the third.
Dan the third. So, as usual when we have these two around, it means that Russians are on the corner. And this week is the Royal Rumble, I think the 30th or 31st Royal Rumble match. And what happened?
No, no, 29th. I don't know. I feel like it's 29.
It's up there. I don't. Yeah. It might be 29 because I mean it's I think it's like 3 years younger than WrestleMania. And WrestleMania is at what 20? The 32 this year.
Yeah.
So it might be 29.
They'll spend the whole pay per view telling us it's the 29th anniversary of the Royal Rumble anyway. So.
Yeah. Next year's gonna be fun when they call it the 30th anniversary of whatever. Anyhow, it's the 29th. It's on.
Oh,
that's what it says on working. Yeah.
First one was
1988, I guess.
So were you alive then?
80.
Oh.
Yes, I was. I've been alive for almost every major WWE pay per view. I am 2 days younger than the original WrestleMania. That is the only pay-per-view I was not born for. And yet...
Man,
anyhow, we are here to discuss my age. But we are here to talk about gimmick matches, because the Royal Rumble is, in my opinion, and I hope everybody's opinion, the greatest gimmick match, or the greatest match type in all of professional wrestling. Just because I don't think there's anything like it in any other sport. Like, you know, professional wrestling, one-on-one matches you can see in boxing, MMA, and all that other stuff. But there's nothing quite like the Royal Rumble. Even Battle Royals, which are similar in concept, aren't necessarily the same. There's an element of anything can happen. There's an element of surprise and intrigue. I mean, granted, there's been years where it's like there's that one person who's going to win. But it's everything that happens in between that hour that kind of hooks you. So to kind of back up and explain what the Royal Rumble is. The Royal Rumble is, like I said, in a sense, a battle royal. It's a battle royal with two competitors start off, and then, let's say, anywhere between 30 seconds to 2 minutes. And depending on the year, it varies even in that time frame. Intervals, a new superstar comes out until all 30 competitors has come in, and the last man left in the ring, or woman, there's been women who participated in this match, wins, and you know, it depends on the year. The first few years, you just won. 92, you won the world title. Since then, it's pretty much been that you've almost been guaranteed to go to WrestleMania in the main event. Well, you've been guaranteed to go to WrestleMania in a title match. Let's put it that way. This year will be the first time that the world title has been defended in the Royal Rumble match itself. Which I guess WWE thinks is a big hook. I think it actually limits the Royal Rumble because it's like, it's going to be one or two people more than usual, because it's either going to be the champion or it's going to be the guy he's feuding with.
I feel like there's only three people that it could possibly be, of which none of them I will be happy about.
I'm a little more positive about it. I mean, I think it's kind of interesting. I mean, if you think about like last year, we pretty much all knew Roman Reigns was going to win. And because there's only certain people that can go to the main event of WrestleMania. So in that way, it's sort of like there's only certain people that can win anyway. So at least the title's on the line.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It limited even, like, it used to be, and you know, this is what I meant, like, you're not necessarily guaranteed to go to the main event, but it used to be with the brand split, what would happen is, like, SmackDown would be so undefined that you'd have a bunch of people who were kind of surprise wins. You know, like, Rey Mysterio won 1 year, and I mean, everybody, in hindsight, it's the Eddie Guerrero nostalgia tour, but it was kind of a big surprise. I mean, I think going in, it was either going to be Orton or Triple H for a lot of people. 2008, when Cena came back in a surprise appearance. 2007, when Undertaker won. 2010, when Edge came back. I think those were all kind of big surprises. But in recent years, it has kind of been really well-defined. I mean, and part of that problem is you started to see fans rebel against it, because the last two or three Royal Rumbles have not And I'm not just talking about snarky people online. I'm talking about fans in the arena have rebelled against those pay-per-view. And it takes it out to really screw up. It really takes it out to screw up the Royal Rumble. They've managed to do that before.
Yeah, I mean, I think last year was a pretty apparent mistake where they had Daniel Bryan. If you were going to have Daniel Bryan lose the Royal Rumble, just don't have him on at all. And to have him lose and then have Roman Reigns, who I guess, you know, people are more accepting of him now, but last year it was just people hated him and did not want him.
Well, there's a lot of things I want to ask you. You mentioned the Daniel Bryan thing. I think the other thing, other than Roman Reigns, which was that whole Big Show and Kane segment where they just kind of jobbed out like the entire mid-card scene, like Dean Ambrose, I think Seth Rollins was in the main event. There was like five or six people they just threw out, like, and it was just it gets to the point where like you're looking at people who've been in the company. At that point, I think Big Show was in the company 16 years. Kane's been in the company almost 20 years. And they're the ones dominating the Royal Rumble. It's like fans don't care. You took out the people they would have rooted for. Daniel Bryan was gone before, I think, entry number 15. So he was gone halfway through the match. So it's like they have nobody to root for. They don't care about your chosen superstar. And then like the people that they could hope for are being demolished by these two idiots nobody wants or cares about in the Royal Rumble.
I think the problem is that even if the guys aren't going to win it, there's no real reason why you can't just throw the crowd a bone. At least show them some sort of respect towards it. When you have Daniel Bryan get eliminated that early, yeah, sure, it might have eventually ended up pissing him off if Roman Reigns eliminated him like before he won it, but to be out that early, and it just makes him seem more like a jobber. Because he doesn't even have decent time in the match.
Yeah, exactly. And it was halfway through. And then, like, it would have pissed people off if he went to the end, but at least they would have had somebody to kind of go behind. Where it's like, once he was gone, it's like, it's going to be Roman Reigns. And everybody's like, we don't care at this point. And it's the same thing the year before, where, like, Rey Mysterio got a big heel ovation because he wasn't Daniel Bryan.
Yeah. Well, I kind of put the Kane Big Show thing out of my mind, but that
I did too until people started posting GIFs of them just like dumping everybody.
That's one of the things I'm happy about. They sort of gone away from them in the last. Well, they've had the face turn with Kane, and Big Show's kind of been still around, but it's not like. He was last year. He was really like involved in stuff. Like they had the whole authority angle. And
yeah, they go back and forth with him too much. I mean, that's the joke with the Big Show. But I meant like even between his heel and face turns, they'll put him in the main event on and off, and it gets to the point where like he can legitimately be a threat, but it's done so inconsistently that it just kind of gets old, and nobody takes him. Like, we don't expect Big Show to be in the main event at WrestleMania, so why are Big Show and Kane being the ones to go over? It's the same thing with, nobody cared about Roman Reigns, and, you know, they're still kind of recovering from that, because it's a year ago, and it was pretty much at the point they wanted to be last year at this time, where, I'm not going to say fans are 100% behind him, but at least he doesn't get booed anymore. Like, he doesn't really get much of an ovation when he comes out, but they don't boo him.
It's safe for seeing Sheamus, I think. The lack of giving a damn is safe for Sheamus.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what because I went to Raw a few weeks ago, and that was what really struck me, is like, you and it's probably because of how he's pushed or whatever, but it was the night Cena returned, and compared to John Cena, everybody else is a joke on that roster. Like, Roman Reigns came out, whatever. Even Vince, whatever. Steph. Dean Ambrose gets a decent pop. Cena had the entire crowd eating out of his hands. And it's like, this is the guy they want to lead their company. And it's like, he gets no type of reaction whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could easily see a similar scenario to last year where it's Roman Reigns versus the main authority guys.
Well, it's going to be Roman Reigns. It's going to be Roman Reigns versus Triple H, and it's either going to come down to Triple H screwing him out of the match or Triple H winning the match. This is what I don't like about heel authority figures. Or it's like, okay, take the Sheamus Roman Reigns match from 2 weeks ago with the special guest referee. If you have a special guest referee, why do you play by the rules? You can literally just count three and say it was a three count. You don't necessarily need to have it be an official three count if you want him to lose the match.
Yeah, yeah. I think long term they really, really need to get rid of the authority. Like they almost did last year, brought it back for seemingly no reason.
So it's also annoying that they can't make their mind of whether the authority are going to act like heels or babyface. And Triple H is the most flagrant offender of this, because you watch him on Raw, and then when he appears on NXT and then on Breaking Ground, he's babyface.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that people commented on, especially after TLC, where he got beat up by Roman Reigns, and then the story was like, nobody's seen Triple H since then, but, oh, he's on TakeOver, perfectly fine, that Wednesday, and you have Roman Reigns coming out Thursday, like, nobody's seen Triple H since I beat him up, like, yeah, we all did, we all watched that show last night, he was there, he was fine.
So has Triple H still not been on Raw since then?
No.
Oh, because I've not watched Raw since Sheamus won the belt, so...
I don't blame you. There's a joke that I posted, and it's true, but like Raw has pretty much started the same exact way for the past 5 weeks, where it's like a McMahon comes out, Roman Reigns interrupts them, they talk down to him, put him in some, you know, it's this scenario where it's so over the top that it doesn't make any sense. Like I'm trying to think back to it, and I'm like, why did the authority hate Roman Reigns so much? And I don't know why. The authority was made to counter Daniel Bryan. It made sense. Daniel Bryan wasn't their type of champion. Roman Reigns is exactly the type of guy they wanted to put the title on.
Which begs the question more, why did he not turn heel at Survivor Series?
I mean, I understand from their point of view, and, you know, we always complain they don't make enough new stars, so they want a major face. The problem is, it's like, it's not a face that people are embracing. Like, you think about all of the big faces in recent years. I mean, almost all of the big faces started off had a huge heel run. Like, Roman Reigns was heel during the Shield, but that was part of an ensemble, that was a part of a group. Hogan, you know, many people forget that he was a heel before he became Hulkamania, ripping his t-shirts and whatever. Austin was, of course, a heel Austin was even a heel when he was a face. Rock, heel, how he defined his character. Even John Cena started as a heel. Some would say as a much better character, but Roman Reigns, it's like that putting him to 10, starting him at 1 without going through any of the numbers in between, so he doesn't have a lot of those little touches that you earn in the trenches. And I think the fans realize that, because, I mean, I listen to Austin's podcast, and he always talks about, like, Roman Reigns seems like he's trying too hard to be a good guy. Like, he does that evil smirk through everything, and it's like, it's not cool or anything, it's just annoying and cocky to a lot of people.
Because he's too pretty, that's why. I don't have time for you. Can't be that pretty and then be babyface. It'll just piss people off.
You can't be that pretty, that big, and that jacked, and expect people to want you to be the underdog. When you think about it, he's feuding with a 70-year-old man, and he's supposed to be the good guy here.
Exactly. Feuding with a 70-year-old man attacks a guy who's not a full-time wrestler, and I'm supposed to believe that he's babyface. It's like when Cena bullied was like making fat jokes all the time about Vicky Guerrero. I'm like, you're the babyface.
Yeah. But I mean, at least then it was defined why Prince Vicky was kind of whatever. But yeah, it's like he attacked Triple H unprovoked. Like, I watched that. Survivor Series, like, Triple H came out to congratulate him and give him a handshake. He didn't attack him. He didn't try to distract him. He didn't try to attack. And he spears the guy. I'm like, why? Like, you lost the title because you were an idiot.
Yeah. I mean, I think it all comes down to Vince. And because I've been watching a lot of Breaking Ground, and there's a guy on there who's like, you know, ripped, and he's like athletic, and they're like, yeah, people are going to hate you just because of the way you look. And it's like, yeah, that's why people hate Roman Reigns. Like, how do you say that to your NXT people, but you don't realize that for your main roster people? And I think it's once they start shifting that perception, then hopefully they can do something interesting with him.
But the problem is like, is the damage done? Like, how do you rehab Roman Reigns? Like, because right now, like, even if he gets through this feud with Triple H and the Authority, like, what's next? It's not like they're building up a stable of quality heels for him to go after, and he can't continue fighting with the McMahons.
Well, and I think they're definitely going to take the title away from him.
Even if they take it away, he's going to get it back at Mania. He is going to be their guy.
But they can't have him have the title. They want him to have a little bit of a chase leading up to WrestleMania. So I definitely see him like losing it. I don't know to Triple H though. That seems.
To Triple H, I think that's the best course of action for its matches that we haven't seen. I'd rather see a rematch of a match that. Say at Extreme Rules, I'd rather see a rematch at Extreme Rules of a match I'd only seen for the first time at WrestleMania properly, rather than see Triple H versus Rock, Triple H versus Brock. It's really, then when you think about it, Triple H winning isn't the worst, winning the Rumble isn't really the worst thing in the world.
It's worse in the sense that it's the same issue that the WWE has run into for the past 7 or 8 years, in that they don't build up anybody throughout the year. They put all these part-timers in the main event at WrestleMania, and then the next night we're back to square one because you don't have your Undertaker, you don't have your Brock, you don't have your Triple H, you don't have Rock, you don't have...
Yeah.
And it's the same situation. It's like, at some point, like, okay, you know, like, at some Undertaker's going to retire, he's 50, Triple H is probably going to retire soon, Brock probably is going to finish out his contract and be done. So what do you do at WrestleMania 35 when you can't put out The Undertaker or Brock anymore? You can't even go to the well of the people you have now. It's not like anybody's going to pay to see like Dolph Ziggler come back or to see, I don't know, Batista or anything like that. It's like most of your star power has been in these relics of the Attitude Era. And, you know, like, again, you listen to Austin's podcast, and he talks about, like, as much as the Montreal Screwjob sucked, if it wasn't for Bret Hart leaving and Shawn Michaels getting injured, he may not have been given the opportunity to become the star he became. The same way that Triple H and The Rock became the stars they became when Austin was gone for a year. And it's like, if you have Old Dependent, it's like, okay, nobody's getting over, we'll just go back to Brock, we'll go back to Undertaker sometime later this year. Nobody gets over, nobody moves up, and you end up with nobody on the roster who feels special anymore.
Because it's too much 50. It's a lot of 50-50 booking it within that as well. For the guys that are actually there. Because I'm tired of seeing Dolph. I don't watch Dolph Ziggler matches anymore. Because it's just boring. Because you win 1 week, lose the next week.
Yeah,
This is for someone who refuses to watch SmackDown as a general rule anyway, so I don't need to see that every week.
I think the worst thing about Dolph, and this happened, I mean, it's understandable, is you can tell he's given up. Like, he doesn't even try because he realizes he's stuck where he's at. Like, you look at his wardrobe and it's like some guy going through a midlife crisis in his career. like, he still puts on good matches, but that's it. It's like, it's a Dolph Ziggler match. Like, he's a face who sells like a heel, and he's a heel who has a face offense. Like, at some point, he needs to combine the two and create a face offense that sells like a face, or full-on heel who sells like a heel.
And I think he'll go heel. I think he's frustrated with it, and I think, I don't know, we talk about, like, the signings they've had, but that's one of the ways they're probably going to try to, you know, increase talent is just sign lots of people and hope some of them stick.
This is my problem with that, is if you look at the history of the WWE, they do not like outside talent.
You know, especially if you work for WCW, just don't bother.
Yeah. Like, eventually they might get over, but you look at people, like, okay, go back to 15 years ago, 16 years ago now, Radical's debut. Big stars for huge signing, pretty much the same deal. They came in as a stable, they're all talented wrestlers, And you look at the fact that they were top-notch handy hands. None of them became main eventers for 4 or 5 years after that. They had to earn. It's like you start from ground zero with the WWE, because even though you made a name for yourself outside and people recognize you, if they didn't make you, they don't care. So what's going to happen is these people get an initial push. They'll be, you know, they'll come in hot. They'll cool off by the summer, and then they'll spit up, and then everybody's going to have to start working their way back to the top. One or two will make it. The other ones will be in NXT or leave the company by 2018.
Definitely. Yeah, but I think that's okay. I think if one or two make it, that's good. I mean, I think it's changed a bit with NXT with how many what you call indie wrestlers, you know? Really isn't a competitor. Even, you know, TNA is not a competitor, so they're all minor leagues compared to WWE. It's not like...
Yes, they're all minor leagues, but they have made an... Like, you know, you can't say AJ Styles is minor. Like, yes, he's not going to be The Rock or Austin, but I would put him on the level of most of the mid-card scene right now, as far as recognition goes.
Yeah.
Sure.
And the problem isn't that one or two is going to make it. It's that that they won't have an immediate impact. Like what you're saying would make sense. You have four new guys who can go, who are talented, who have charisma, who can work on the mic. They should inject your main event scene right away, but that's not going to happen. You're going to see like Roman Reigns' first few feuds will be, he'll probably fight with Kevin Owens. He'll fight with Sheamus. Maybe he'll have a feud with Alberto Del Rio. Like, I imagine that he'll fight with the League of Nations after they split up. I mean, they might as well for a bit. And then SummerSlam, if Cena's back in time, it'll be Roman versus Cena or Roman versus Seth if he's back. Something, because the problem right now with Roman Reigns is he has a very explosive offense, but he doesn't really have the things to make a great match as he has a great wrestler against him. So he's going to be put with people who can go. This is why, you know, he'll be put with Del Rio. Sheamus is a brawler. He'll be put with Owens because Owens just makes most people look good. Cesaro when he comes back, stuff like that. And then once, I don't know if you remember a few years ago when he fought Orton in a few matches and how terrible those were.
Well, he's had a lot of kind of terrible matches in the last year, but yeah, I mean, I think we all have our fantasy booking ways of making it better, but with what they have now, I mean, it could be a lot worse. People could be booing him. People sort of accept him, which is better than I think they probably thought was going to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, at some point, you're the face of your company, the main star, shouldn't be somebody they kind of accept. Like, for all the hate he gets, you've never seen John Cena come out to a match with indifference.
Right.
Like Roman Reigns, sometimes he comes out and it's like, he'll get the initial pop when his music starts and then it dies down.
But still, yeah. Screw that entrance, I'm sick of it. Come out through the ramp like a wrestling prick.
Somebody, I don't know if you read the best and worst of reviews on Up Rocks. But yeah, somebody pointed out like Roman Reigns is kind of like that guy, like that. He's like the college athlete who graduated college and all his friends moved on, but he still wears the varsity jacket. He still talks about his college days. It's like you're not cool anymore. You're kind of the old guy holding on to your legacy because Dean Ambrose moved on. He has a new look. He has new music. Seth Rollins, new look, new music. Roman Reigns, same music, same look, whatever. It's like, you know, CM Punk famously said that anytime he changed, he always wanted to change it. Whenever he changed his gimmick, he wanted to change his appearance because it meant it was something new. You know, like when he came back, he had the shorter hair, the different music, and stuff like that. Where Roman Reigns is pretty much Roman Reigns when he came in 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, and I think by them, so they think that if they change him, that he'll be less popular. So they're trying to like hold on to this like slim bit of popularity he has, and they think that if you change him at all, that he'll lose that when that's your biggest opportunity to gain popularity. Sort of like a lose-lose, but I think either him or Ambrose has to go heel, and then you have him versus Ambrose.
Well, I think you could... I think you can do him versus Ambrose as a face versus face. What you can't do, and after this, we'll move on and actually talk about gimmick matches. What you can't do is what they did at Survivor Series, is like Ambrose lost their reigns.
That was horrible.
And then nothing. Like, there was no reaction to him the next night. Ambrose wasn't upset. He didn't see... Like, you went for the biggest prize in the company. You lost, and you have no reaction to it whatsoever?
Yeah, they handled that completely the wrong way.
Yeah, so... Yeah, that was just awful. But anyhow, that's kind of the state of WWE Royal Rumble this weekend. But we did start... We started the show with the idea of talking about gimmick matches, kind of as your history lesson of wrestling. And like we said, the Royal Rumble. We've gone through some of the basics, one-on-one tag team matches before. Stuff that kind of gets played out now, but used to be very rare. Triple threat matches and fatal four-way are what they say. Triple threat means that there's three people in a match. Fatal four-way means that there's four people in a match. Depending on the rules, a fatal four-way and a triple threat is usually the first person to score a pinfall or submission. There's usually no disqualification. There are alternates where people can sometimes have elimination rules. I think it's usually best for them to ignore the elimination rules, because what tends to happen is there are times, and we'll get to this when we go through the rest of the gimmick matches, there are times where you just break the internal logic of wrestling. Like with an elimination match, it doesn't make any sense for anybody to break up the pinfall or submission because it benefits them. But you still see people do it, and their announcers try to explain it away as instincts or, you know, helping a friend. It's like, no, you get rid of that guy. It's only one of us yes.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, I like triple threat matches. I think, you know, it doesn't break anything. It makes sense why you would break up a pin, because you have to make the pin to win. And you get interesting combinations sometimes. I still think my favorite match in a long time was the Brock versus Cena versus Seth Rollins. So
don't get me wrong. I think, like I said, a triple threat. Triple threats are better than fatal four ways. Fatal four ways are hard to book. The problem was, like, there's sometimes it's like a triple threat elimination match, and that's where it becomes weird. The triple threat match itself makes perfect sense, except for that weird logic where, like, you get co-signed and you're on the floor for, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, to combat that, I think, was, I'm going to praise TNA, but this is about when TNA was good. Unbreakable 2005, Smojo against Daniels versus the phenomenal AJ Styles, where it was pretty much, they were all at least involved for the majority of the match. There wasn't a lot of, oh, and now you're out of the ring and through magical injury, like when Roman Reigns fell asleep a couple months ago.
Ah, crap. That was the role where they were chanting, where is Roman's napping?
Roman's sleeping.
Well, that is something I've been thinking about, and we can kind of skip over, but booking the Royal Rumble must be really hard, because I've been watching, like, the 92, and it's just, it must be, you know, you obviously have the winner planned out, but, like, and you obviously have a few things, but there's obviously so much that you can't plan for that sometimes it can, you know, sometimes they get lucky, I guess, with the improvising, but then sometimes it can just be a mess of people just, you know, sitting in the corner just waiting for something to happen. You know, like, you always see that where, like, with the Royal Rumbles or with Battle Royales, where people are just, like, you can tell they're just waiting for something.
Yeah, I've always been, and I don't think this has ever happened, and I assume they take a ton of precaution. I've always been curious what happens if the intended winner accidentally gets eliminated, because, like, you know, they always have to have those spots where, like, the winner looks like they're going to go.
You mean 2005?
Well, okay, that was different, because that was at the very end, but yes, that was, but I meant, like, earlier in the match.
No, dude, that happened. It's happened. It has happened, I'm sure it has. It was during the dream.
I don't think it's ever happened.
I feel like it has happened, and I've heard an interview where they talked about how they were supposed to at least... It might not have been win, but come really close. But they got eliminated. And, you know, there's no way to work the logic. He went over the top rope like an idiot.
I would love to hear it. I don't think that's ever happened. As far as the Royal Rumble, it might have happened in a Battle Royal.
Hmm.
but I don't, because as I mean, like the closest was 2005, and that was the very end, and they got to play off of it. Even though, if you watch the replay, I think Batista hits the fear way before Cena does. But they got to play off
of his quads.
Which is still, I don't, I would have, like, walk into the ring, he tore his quads.
Well, he tore his quads getting in.
Yeah. And they could have paid off history with that, with the 94 ending, which they kind of did, and then they restarted the match, which was stupid. But I would be, like, if, let's say it's Roman Reigns and Triple H, and let's say somebody acts, like, say somebody tries, cause somebody tries to throw them over, maybe it's too slippery and they fall out, like, what happens then?
Yeah, that'd be really interesting.
Okay, so we have... Okay, and I guess we might as well talk about this, because this is the only other match announced for the Royal Rumble pay-per-view so far. The Last Man Standing match, which is always such an odd match in the sense that I get it, but it's such a weird momentum start-stopper, because it's like, do something, wait for 8 seconds, do something, wait for 9 seconds, do something, instead of like being a full-on back-and-forth match that had breaks in between for the referee to count.
Yeah, it's definitely not one of my favorites, but, you know, maybe...
I think it doesn't... Yeah, go ahead.
You just maybe explain the rules of it.
So, okay, the Last Man Standing match is pretty much what it says. It's when a... Okay, and the WWE sense, the Last Man Standing match is a match where you incapacitate your opponent to a count of 10 where they cannot reach their feet. I should say they can't reach their feet, because they can still be awake, as we've seen time and time again with people using duct tape to tie their opponent's feet to the ropes or something so they can't stand up. I've mentioned before, I think when we're doing different variations of this, in the olden days, WWE and WCW used to use this variation in that you had to pin your opponent first, and then they couldn't answer a count, so you had to beat them twice literally. Which was always just a terrible idea, because you're beating somebody multiple times and it just looks bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think it helps nowadays that mostly finishers are not finishers, so they can't even use that to kill the match. You know, like a definitive where it'll be like, oh, they've taken 4 RKOs and he can still get to his feet.
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem that they have in general, because it's like, oh, yeah, you hit your finisher, you hit... Like, if they do it where it's kind of like you spam it, like you're playing the AKI wrestling game, where you do it like 3 times in a row before your special meter runs out, I'd get that. But, yeah, most of the time it's like he hit an RKO, then he'll stagger to the ropes. 8! He's on his feet! Hit another RKO. Yeah, it's... That said, there have been some great Last Man Standing matches. One of my personal favorites at the Royal Rumble, actually, was John Cena versus Umaga from 2007. Really good Last Man Standing match.
Totally forgot about Umaga.
Yeah, so it's a WWE history. So yes, what else do we have? Iron Man matches, which are not used often, partially because I don't think the audience can actually sit there for an hour anymore and be entertained. But Iron Man matches are the most falls, pinfall, submission, count out, disqualifications in a set time period. Somewhere between 30 minutes and an hour. 30 minutes is always weird, because a lot of WWE main events are like 25 minutes as it is. So it's like 5 or 10 more minutes, whatever.
Yeah, they did the 30-minute Iron Woman match for NXT. Still mad they called it an Iron Man match.
Their logic made sense. They didn't want to call it an Iron Woman match because it makes it seem like a lesser match to people. Where if you call it an Iron Man match, it makes it seem like it's an equal thing for men and women, which it was. I think that Brooklyn match is better, but it was a really damn good match.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's a good example that you can still do it. I mean, they could easily do that with maybe not Roman Reigns, but you know, some people on the main roster could definitely do that. So yeah, it'll be interesting if they do that again sometime. But they haven't done it in a while.
Okay. So now we're going to get into my favorite trios, my favorite group of matches. No Holds Barred, Street Fight, No Disqualification, False Count Anywhere. Because for some reason, the WWE likes to use those as different types of matches, when there's literally only two matches in there. False count anywhere is different because you can pin or make somebody submit anywhere in the building. Fine. Everything else, same exact logic. No disqualifications, no count out. That's all you're saying. I don't care how you dress it up.
See, I love it when they go, it's a no DQ, fatal four-way. You're just like, yeah, of course.
Like, yeah, what are you going to do? Wait, one person gets disqualified, the match is over.
That's what you should do from now on, to just make it that you can get disqualified in the fatal four-way. Then they can start using that as a promotional tool. There will be no disqualifications.
My favorite is the WWE sometimes runs like WWE app votes or whatever, and they had one where it was like false count, and it was no host barred, it was a street fight, and it was a no disqualification match. And they go back to King and Cole at the table, and like Michael Cole was, King was like, some of our fans are probably wondering what the difference between these matches are. And that's it. Like, he's like, he sets it up, and he doesn't explain away what the difference is.
The difference is in the street fight, you wear jeans. Don't forget that.
Oh, that reminds me of a non-sanctioned match, there, which is pretty much the same thing. It's like, yes, it's a wardrobe choice, but yeah, it's always weird when they try to make it sound like something that it's not.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we've had variations on that. The empty arena match, which, thank God, they don't do often. I only know of two, I think. I think TNA did one. But for TNA, I think that might have just been the attendance in general.
Oh, shots fired.
But no, they did one for Rock versus Mankind back in 99. And TNA did one between Angle and, I want to say, Sting?
That sounds about right. Was that during the main event Mafia?
Yeah, I believe so. I think the idea was that no main event Mafia people could interfere that way. And I think they still ended up being in part of the match.
Of course. I'm sure Scott Steiner was there being amazing, shouting whatever obscenity that he decides to come out of his mouth and make no sense. Because all men are created equal.
I'm sorry. I've missed a few of those as well. There's a death match. There's the Extreme Rules match.
Oh, God, yeah.
Ravens Rules.
Hardcore match and Extreme Rules.
Hardcore matches. Oh, my gosh. It drives me nuts because like I don't think they do Extreme Rules anymore. They still do Extreme Rules. And it's like the one night a year where the WWE goes Extreme. I'm like, but you go Extreme for TLC. You had an Elimination Chamber.
Hell
in a Cell. Hell in a Cell. Money in the Bank is automatic. I mean, most of your pay-per-views you quote-unquote go Extreme for.
Did he still do where every match is Extreme on Extreme Rules?
No, I don't even think that's true.
Because when he did that, then that was fine, I suppose. So you can make the excuse that if the one night WWE goes Extreme, if every match is some sort of Extreme.
It was most of them, for sure.
I think, one, it's the same thing where they try to dress it up where, like, year was, like, one match is no disqualification, one match is false count anywhere, one match is a street fight. It's like, yeah, pretty much saying they're all no DQ. But I don't think it was last year. I don't think every match was Extreme. I think what they start doing is just, like, maybe the main event or one or two feuds. But, yeah, I honestly hate the idea of reverse booking, which is you book to a pay-per-view match because Extreme Rules, so it has to be, okay, it can actually is, it was a Chicago street fight, a Kiss My Arse match,
oh,
a Russian chain match, Last Man Standing match, and a steel cage.
The Russian chain match was interesting.
Yeah.
With Rusev and Cena, you don't see that very much.
But isn't it just a strap match?
Yes, it's a strap match, but it's always catered to a gimmick, because when JBL won the title from Eddie Guerrero, it was like a Texas bull rope match.
Yeah.
And it's one of those matches that I honestly, it's like the Last Man Standing match, it's so weird in its setup, because like you have to touch the four posts, and you can't have your momentum broken, but you can do it simultaneously. So it's weird, because it's like, why can both people do it at the same time?
I've seen it where it happens within the match, where they decide that it's, you can. And then, no, it's okay now, everyone can do it. You can do it, you can race to make it number four, so you can all be at 3-3.
Yeah.
It's like, make your mind up. It's the whole point in the rules of the match.
And then what constitutes breaking momentum always changes, because like sometimes it's just like pulling them away. Sometimes it's like you literally have to stop them, their momentum, and put them on the mat. It's like, I don't get it. But yeah, those matches are usually catered more towards the heel, so that the face can use, and most of these gimmick matches are headed toward heel so that the face can use without being pinned or made to submit.
Well, a lot of the time that it's the heel that makes the match as well.
Yeah.
Gets to choose their match more than anything.
Which is why, you know, you had a Russian chain match, because it was Rusev, who's Bulgarian, and the Texas Bull Rope match, which was JBL, because he was the heel.
Both from Texas, so it's fine.
Awesome. First dread matches, which we don't do anymore for some odd reason.
Well, I feel like it's a good thing, because you know Brock Lesnar blades anyway, because there's no reason why. It's weird how Brock Lesnar always seems to get busted open, so I'm convinced he's bleeding.
Yeah, I don't get what happens to him. It's kind of insane.
I think he just has, you know, his skin is relative. I don't think he's bleeding or anything.
But did he get busted open this much in UFC?
I don't know. Probably. No. I would assume. Because people get bloody off one punch in UFC, so...
Yeah, but that's when it's like when someone hits you in the nose. He's getting busted in his forehead all the time. And it's not... It's forehead, and it's not like it's just above the eye. It's generally across his forehead.
Yeah, and it's... I mean, it's at this point, he gets busted open for whatever. Like, literally, I assume Brock sneezes and his head busts open. But no, our first Fred match... We're talking about the Royal Rumble earlier, where I've always been curious about like what happens if you get busted open accidentally. I mean, if you get eliminated accidentally. We have had first dread matches where people have gotten busted open accidentally during a match, and they had to cover it up in some fashion. Or like, the referee didn't see, or... it's really stupid.
Yeah, it makes it tough to book it. You know, you have to either... you know, playing it out really well, or blade, you know, and I think they don't want to do that anymore.
They don't want to do it because it's not safe anymore, but it was, again, there's certain matches I think are great feud enders, and I think a first red match is a good one. I think Hell in a Cell used to be a good one. Now it's kind of, eh. But yeah, I don't miss spread in wrestling. I think if it's used sparingly, like it was during Brock Taker's Hell in a Cell, it works. But it used to get, you know, you had people like Ric Flair and who would get busted open at the side of somebody's fist. And it just kind of got ridiculous after a while.
And let's not forget how much it, in the long run, it messes up your face as well. Dusty Rhodes before he died.
Dusty Rhodes, and I think, who's the other? Mad Dog. Like, you just look at some of those 80s and 90s rushes, and their foreheads is nothing but, like, dried over skin.
Yeah.
What else do we have? Oh, I mean, we've mentioned it several times. We might as well talk about the variations of a cage match or an enclosure match. We have the traditional cage match, which rules depends on the day of the week and who cares, but
and
it's...
the WWE games have decided that they will change the rules.
So traditionally, it's you win by either climbing over the cage or going through the door. And I really think they were stupid for them to add that door, because I'm always like, why climb over? Your opponent's out. Just use the door.
Yeah, the door is such a mistake. I like the old blue cage, you know, with the where you had to climb over, and it was really good matches.
Yeah, I don't know why they got rid of it, because that also aesthetically was different, but it also made it so much easier to climb, where these other things, I'm just like, this has to be a pain in the ass, because you actually literally have to know how to climb a fence.
I wonder if it's like a medical thing, like if someone got really hurt, how they'd get into the ring.
Well, no, I think they retired, because they've used it sparingly since then. Like, I know they did it one when they had like the old school Raw a few years ago, they pulled out the blue cage. But I think it was just an aesthetic thing where it kind of looks like a product. It doesn't match the current WWE aesthetic.
No, it's true.
A match that I kind of miss, but not so much as other people, War Games, The Match Beyond, which was a, not an elimination, it's a, what would you call it? A tag team match, I guess?
It's like, what's TNA's basic version of War Games?
Yep. It's not House of, wow.
Lockdown. Lethal Lockdown.
Not yet, Lethal Lockdown. Yes, and it's the same concept, except one cage instead of two. But basically, you have, it's like the Royal Rumble. You start off with two people in the ring, and then every, I think it was like 5 minutes, or something like that, a new person from either team would approach the ring until, like, I think it's 4-on-4 or 5-on-5, until everybody's in the ring. No falls can actually be scored until then, and the only way to win is by submission or surrender. It was fun. It was unique. They did it once a year. WCW was big in the stables. Like we said before, WWE doesn't like ideas that they don't initiate. Mm-hmm. So they didn't do War Games, but they did create the Elimination Chamber, which is essentially the same idea except single competitors, and you can be eliminated at any time.
Well, they did do that. The last Elimination Chamber, they had the tag team.
Yeah, but even then, that was still treated as like single entities, where it's like a tag team got in, not a tag team wrestler.
Yeah.
And you got eliminated once somebody on the team was pinned.
Well, the Elimination Chamber used to be my favorite stipulation match. Because I don't know why it was exactly about it, which made me love it so much, especially in the early days of it. Well, what, Triple H won three of them?
Yeah,
three of the first four, or something like that?
It kind of became the Triple H match after a while. Like, there was one time, and this drove me nuts, there was one time he was stripped of the title.
Oh, 2005.
Yes, he was stripped of the title and put into an Elimination Chamber match where he won the title back. I'm like, what was going to take the title off of him?
Because that was coming out of the thing that I think they should bring back. From the 2004 Survivor Series, where everyone got to run Raw for a week. The winning team got to run Raw for a week in Eric Bischoff's absence.
Yes, but you see, the problem with that logic is that's something you do to a babyface. It's not something you do to a heel. A heel doesn't overcome the odds.
He did overcome the odds. Nobody thought that with the help of Batista he could possibly win the match.
And Randy Orton. Oh, no, Randy Orton was a face back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
thank
that was
God
a
that's not
face
a thing
turn.
Anymore.
Yeah. Well, he's a face now, but...
He's a tweener, I prefer, because he does heelish things anyway. He does, the RKO is just the most overmoving professional wrestling.
But the other thing, that actually before that one, the one where he beat Goldberg was also really stupid.
Oh, yeah. Where it only made sense for Goldberg to win the match in the Triple H, but nah, lol.
Yeah.
No, Triple H wins.
But no, it kind of got watered down once they kind of made it its own thing. And again, it's kind of going back to booking a match instead of booking a story. It's like, okay, we'll have... Like, sometimes it made sense when they started to do it as a bridge between the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania for the other title to either determine a champion or the number one contender. But then it just got to the point... Like you said, Ashley was in a kind of a title one and a tag team title one. It's like, oh, I mean, part of that was also because they announced this pay-per-view 2 weeks before it happened.
Yeah, it wasn't even a pay-per-view. I think it was network exclusive, right?
Oh, I don't know what to call them anymore. I still call them pay-per-views, but yeah, it was network exclusive, but it was treated as a special event. But yeah, who does that? Who's like, oh, we're going to have a pay-per-view in 2 weeks?
And that was when it was what? What was the one before it, though? Because there was one just before it.
It was 5 weeks with three pay-per-views.
And then NXT TakeOver, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just really bad planning, and I bet they're going to do it again this year.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think I agree with you, Earl. Like, I don't like when they, you know, have the extreme rules, and it's like, it doesn't make sense for the storylines. It's just like, oh yeah, we need to, or TLC, like, oh, we need to have a ladders, tables and chairs match. Instead of like, you know, back in the, you know, Hardy Boys and, you know, Dudley Boys and the Hardys and stuff. It was like that. It made sense when they would do a tables match.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, we're going to have a Hell in a Cell match in October because that's when the pay-per-view is. It's like, sometimes there aren't feuds hot enough. Like, like Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt wasn't hot enough, I think, for a Hell in a Cell match.
Alberto Del Rio versus CM Punk versus Cena, wasn't it? In the Hell in a Cell match.
No, exactly. It's like, oh, well, just put, like, Mark Henry versus, what was it? Mark Henry versus Randy Orton? That wasn't Hell in a Cell quality.
The last what was the last one that should have been, apart from maybe Brock versus Taker?
Brock versus Taker made complete sense for Hell in a Cell because of who they are.
Yeah, what was the last one worthy of that? Probably the last time Undertaker was in it. Was that what, the CM Punk one? Or the Batista one?
No, it was his Triple H one, wasn't it? The one at WrestleMania 27?
It was a Hell in a Cell match at 27.
28.
Okay, I've never watched 28. I didn't watch WrestleMania, any WrestleManias from 26 to 31.
30's good.
It was barely watching wrestling. But that's beside the point. There were very few times in the Hell in a Cell he's even mattered anymore. And this even before it became its own pay per view, there were very rare times when the Hell in a Cell was even being.
And that was because when they did it before, Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker made complete sense, especially how the story was booked, where like they had two matches that kept on ending in DQ. Fine, Undertaker versus Mankind is infamous. I don't think it had a reason to exist, but I think the story made sense from McMahon's point of view. It crossed the line when it was Undertaker versus Big Boss Man.
Oh, the one that they never mentioned, really. Is that the one where we hung him?
Yep.
Wait, yeah. So, another incident of the Undertaker and his brother committing murder on TV and getting away with it.
Yep.
I think it's the problem with
magical Undertaker powers.
Where you know going in that there's going to be a Hell in a Cell every October, it sort of takes away. Because if Brock Undertaker was the first Hell in a Cell in like 3 years, that would have been huge.
Yeah, but if it's like, it wasn't even the OU one on the card.
Right. Yeah, that was. Yeah,
because it also hurts everybody else. Like, we can't do as many of the spots because there's another one coming up here. Yeah, like with the TLC match that follows a tables match, a chairs match, a ladders match. Thank God the stairs match is not a thing anymore.
Or the chairs match.
But when you do that, you're just hurting the later in the card to justify naming a title, because they don't feel like they can justify naming it the pay-per-view that with only one of the matches.
But is it? And that's the problem. It's like, I mean, I guess it's not a big deal because they don't necessarily depend on pay-per-view buys anymore, but that's they should get away from that because they have the network now. It's not like you have to sell a pay-per-view. But I guess the problem is they don't know how to sell pay-per-views on the actual matches anymore. They don't know how to sell it on, like, Randy Orton versus Sheamus or something like that. So Randy Orton versus Sheamus in a Hell in a Cell won't sell, but at least it has Hell in a Cell now. But yes, because if you look at it, Hell in a Cell debuted in 97. There was officially 15 of them in that decade, and then there's been 17 of them in the past decade. And some of these are really not Hell in a Cell matches. There's a tag team title match between Undertaker. I mean, there's a tag title match between Undertaker and Stone Cold versus Mankind and Kane, which never got started. Undertaker, Mankind versus Kane never got started. Some of these were just kind of like gimmicks. So we have the Hell in a Cell match, but the actual match didn't take place. Anyhow, yes.
Bring back the Armageddon.
Bring back the six-man Hell in a Cell match. Other retired cage matches. We had we mentioned Lethal Lockdown, which is essentially the same thing as War Games, except it's a single cage. And the roof isn't on the entire time. The roof comes in at the end, right? Or is that not the
thing? For Lethal Lockdown, yeah. That's when the weapons come down.
Yeah, so the match takes place, and that's when everybody's in the cage. The top of the cage is always down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least that's how I remember them doing it. It might have changed it in recent years.
Yeah. And then it's the same thing. Well, it's not the same thing, but they also have the House of Hardcore, which is a cage match that has weapons aligned around the cage match.
Oh, let's not forget about the greatest one ever. They've also had the handcuffed steel cage one.
I don't think that's
the electrified steel cage.
Oh, yes. I was... Okay, some of these are stupid. The barbed wire steel cage match between JBL and Big Show, where the top of the cage was covered in barbed wire.
There was no way out.
God damn you. Because it was No Way Out.
Yeah, bring back No Way Out. I like No Way Out.
I like No Way Out. I have more fondness of No Way Out than I do of, like, Elimination Chamber. What is it now? Fast Lane?
Yeah.
From the Fast Lane to WrestleMania.
That might be the worst pay-per-view of all.
Because they're on the road to WrestleMania.
Fatal 4-Way is a pretty terrible one as well.
I mean, I dislike it because, like I said, I'm not a huge fan of the Fatal 4-Way match in general. But, yeah, having an entire pay-per-view designed around that was just stupid. It's like, we ran out of gimmick matches. What else do we have? Fatal 4-Way. Yes, everybody has a Fatal 4-Way. But, yes, one that I'm happy kind of retired with WCW. I didn't react it in WCW as it was. The Doomsday Cage match, which is a triple-level cage match that has... If I'm not mistaken, I think the two, they were done in reverse order, I think. The first one, you had to start at the top of the cage and you worked your way down. Each level had a different set of competitors you had to beat. The second one, you had to work your way up and then grab the title at the top of the cage.
Hmm.
Yes. Neither one, I always thought those things were unsafe because, like, oh, you're the first floor. Had a ring, everything else was just kind of on fence, and so anytime like somebody would fall, it would just kind of bounce up and down. I was afraid somebody would fall through it.
It's like a scaffold match.
Yes, a scaffold match, which again was happy that they did once. I only reason I even know about the scaffold matches because you always hear Austin talk about how awful it was. And for you who don't know what a scaffold match is, you literally fought on the top, like a high beam over the arena, on like a narrow path. It's like a fighting game.
Yeah, I think a lot of these that are retired are for, like, safety reasons.
Yeah, again, a lot of these are like, yeah, I think a lot of people are like, oh, this sounds cool. You get there and like, oh, yeah, this doesn't sound safe. Let's do it and never talk about it again. Or some of them you realize don't make any sense. What was the one with WCW had that cage match where you had to put somebody in an electric chair and turn it on?
Oh, I don't know.
I feel like it's something of death.
Yeah, but I forget what it was. And then what happened was they did it to Cactus Jack and the cage didn't go off on the right time. And, yeah, it was really weird. But, and then again, there's a reason this match is retired.
I mean,
yeah, it's pretty crazy Mick Foley's still around, considering how many of these he's been in.
Well, I mean, you weren't actually executed. It was like a spark show, but yes. I mean, he's technically not around. He doesn't wrestle anymore. And he always he talks about the fact that he really can't walk anymore without being in constant pain.
Oh, well, yeah. That's not good.
Yeah.
It seems to be like the recurring theme here is WCW weird gimmick matches, which by extension brings up total nonstop action with the genius that is Vince Russo and his obsession with pole matches.
Well, he loves poles in his real life, so...
The two greatest... Basically, the pole match involves an item being on the pole, and usually, once you get it, you win, but there have been occasions where it just allows you to use the weapon, like the Brock Lesnar Undertaker bike chain match from, like, No Mercy 2003. But that wasn't Vince Russo behind that, so let's ignore that. Vince Russo once booked a Viagra on a pole match, it's not a pole, but it's a forklift.
Yes.
Judy Bagwell on a forklift match.
I don't think they did call Judy Bagwell on a pole match.
Pole, well.
But yes, you put somebody's mom on a forklift. Because technically you don't retrieve her because you have to go to the forklift to get her. But it was stupid. The Viagra one was stupid as well because, like you said, you don't win the match by getting the Viagra. I think they ended up using it on the person who got the Viagra. Like they stuffed the pills down his throat or whatever. It's weird. On a pole matches are stupid because you see people climb the ropes all the time. So it's really weird when people struggle to climb it in this type of match.
Yeah, it's when they treat you like it's the end of a ladder match where you can't walk up, and it's like there's only three ropes. Go faster, and you don't even have to get to the top rope.
Most people can do. Because you see people in matches who jump the top rope, like, and then, oh no, I have to climb these three. Like, no!
Actually, never win a pole match.
Well, Neville might be a problem because he's too short.
Yeah, he climbs the ropes, but he still can't reach it.
Speaking of stupid gimmick matches, stupid gimmick matches.
I mean, don't sugarcoat it.
We mentioned before enclosure matches, but there was a Punjabi prison match, which was a cage match inside of a cage, essentially.
The whole match was designed around back when WWE thought, oh, let's push the great Khali. Good one. And the greatest thing is that at the Bash, the match that was created for the great Khali, he wasn't even allowed to compete in because they realized, oh, we can't edit him like we can for SmackDown. So they replaced him with, what was it, Big Show against Batista?
Yeah, and I think part of it, I think a lot of people got sick. No, was it Big Show? Was it Batista or was it Undertaker? No, it's Batista, because he won the match by jumping from one cage to the other cage.
Yeah, which made sense, I suppose.
Yeah, and on the same side, there was the Dark Kennel from Hell match, which was a cage match inside of a Hell in a Cell match, with Wattwaters running around the ring. And this match, well, one, it's a terrible idea to have live animals anywhere, but this match is mostly infamous for the fact that the dogs ended up crapping around the ring. So you didn't get vicious animals, you got dogs who were just crapping all over the place. What else did we have? Inferno matches. Terrible ideas.
What was the last Inferno? Was that MVP Kane?
Yeah. And you notice that most of the time, well, one, Kane's in all of them. And you'll notice that Kane uses every single one of them because Kane has a long sleeve shirt. And they can set it on fire without actually burning the guy.
Well, Kane was also dangerous. Born in the flames of hell, so he's...
Yeah, but it's a stupid... It's a stupid... Like, okay, even though his matches are kind of the same thing, at least the casket match made sense. It was safe. I don't trust the Buried Alive matches.
So yeah, we should talk about those.
Which one? The casket match or the Buried Alive match?
Well, both. I mean, they're similar. Cool.
The casket match, the old ones used to be like ambulance matches or stretcher matches, which they still have, in that you have to lock somebody in a casket and then wheel them out of the arena. What it evolved to eventually was that you just have to lock somebody in a casket and kill the dead on top of them, which is fine. It makes sense. You have to incapacitate somebody young enough for them not to put up any defenses. A Buried Alive match, on the other hand, is... One, you have to incapacitate somebody in a grave, and then at some time, they have to be incapacitated long enough for you to bury them.
What's this recurring theme? Undertaker being in matches designed to kill somebody?
Which he ends up using most of the time.
Which, I mean, I think the last time was probably a good thing, because, my God, at least he got rid of the American Badass.
I miss the American Badass.
No. I've watched some old things, like, I was bored. So, has The Undertaker actually ever been good at cutting promos? Because that's starting to become a question now, because I'm bored of his whole, I am death, I will murder you, you will rest in peace. Whereas the American Badass one is just terrible promos.
The Undertaker is from the old school. He's from the school of Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan and Macho Man, where you listen to their promos, and it makes no sense whatsoever. It's how it's delivered that, because yeah, it's Undertaker. It's weird because it was the American Badass who kind of pulled this out to me. Well, I mean, he didn't speak much before then, but it's hard not to notice his thick Texan accent now when he speaks, and it doesn't sound intimidating when you say stuff in that accent. But they usually keep it short. Like, you know, he speaks in that gravelly voice, and you will rest. And it's like, yeah, he doesn't say anything. He already said the same thing for 25 years. I'm going to bury you. You're going to meet your match with the Reaper. Rest in peace. And that's pretty much been
Death Valley.
Yeah, that's pretty much been Undertaker's promo style for 25 years. It's the whole mystique around the character. It's the light stim, and it's the hat, it's the hand waving. Yeah, it's the mystique around him. Nobody cares about what he says because what he's going to say is, "I'm going to win.
I'm going to WrestleMania, and you will rest in peace." And then roll your eyes back because it's not the same unless you do that.
Okay, that's cool though. I like when he does like that. When I was a kid, that was like. It's like, yeah, that's cool. That's like a cool thing.
But yes, stretcher matches are pretty much the same thing. You have to tie your opponent down to a stretcher and roll them out of the arena. Similarly, ambulance matches are, you have to lock somebody in the back of an ambulance. Last ride matches are pretty much ambulance matches.
Is that an Undertaker match, a last ride match?
Yes, it is.
Oh, what a surprise. Well, let's talk about the ambulance matches, although it wasn't an ambulance match. His brother, his kayfabe brother, has the power to change just in ambulances, apparently. Went from Corporate Kane with a broken ankle to coming out in smoke for some reason as Demon Kane, slams his foot down, and apparently that can cure a broken ankle. So, you know, magical powers, yeah.
Magical powers. But, yes, I will say Undertaker has had, I think more than any wrestler alive, Undertaker has had more gimmick matches catered to him. He has casket match, Buried Alive, The Ass Ride. Technically, the Hell in the Cell was created for him, too. I mean, it is named Hell. So, yeah, I mean, there's been some ones in between there, but I think they've been one-off that nobody really pays attention to him
has
anymore.
Has there ever been a match designed for John Cena? Like they should do a rap battle match or something like that.
I mean, they've had rap battles before. I don't think they've ever had a rap battle match.
Okay.
Every match has seen a gimmick match, but you just win them all. But LOL, hashtag LOL Cena wins match.
Never done a match that's like... Because I think they... Did they do Rock matches?
No, they have never done like a... Rock had a pay-per-view. He had Rock Bottom.
Right.
And SmackDown, of course.
Yeah, SmackDown was named after him.
But most people don't get matches. It's mostly the gimmicked people, like Undertaker and Kane have, you know, big Inferno matches and stuff like that. And Bray Wyatt, I'm sure, is going to have, at some point, they're going to create like a Sister Abigail match or something like that.
He's gonna put people on crucifixes.
Undertaker's already done that.
Yeah, well, he does have to say it's a Bray Wyatt crucifix match.
And it wasn't a crucifix, it's the Undertaker symbol.
Yeah, because then that makes it okay then, sorry. It was me, Austin!
Just kind of rounding out some other ones, because we're over it. Just some stupid TNA ones.
Yay!
The Reverse Battle Royal, which the point of this was... everybody's outside the ring... And I think it's like the first 8 people who were able to get into the ring were in the Battle Royal, which at that point then turned into a Battle Royal where you have to toss everybody out of the ring. But it doesn't end there, because then the final 2 people have a one-on-one match.
Wow.
Oh, God. Well, that's not too dissimilar from, of course, the King of the Mountain match.
The King of the Mountain.
Basically a reverse ladder match where... You have to, it's like 8-6 men or something like that, starting the match, and you have to pin somebody to get permission to get the belt from the person at ringside and hang it up. And while whoever you pin or submit to get the permission has to then stay in the penalty box for like 2 minutes. And for some reason, that was a lot. See, I don't think the King of the Mountain match is terrible. It's overbooked.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. It's like there's too many There's too many moving parts to it.
If you just leave it as a ladder match at the end, where it's, you don't... I think the most stupid part about it is the penalty box, and of course, hey, referee, give me the belt. Let me hang it up to then release it. That's stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is why reverse matches don't make sense. I mean, I get the idea of like hanging something in a ladder match, and that could work. Because it would work, it would make more sense, and that it would make more sense why people take forever to come for that, and they have extra weight, instead of like them not having any extra weight. But the whole, like, somebody gets pinned, and they're in timeout for a bit, and then it's like, oh, this one person is qualified, so everybody, it's just really overbooked. And if you have to spend more than a minute expanding your match type at the start of the match, you've done it wrong.
Well, it's like they always did that tail of the tape thing for all pretty much every match because they knew they were overcomplicated and they refused to not do that.
And I mean, I'm not going to leave the WWE out of this. The championship scramble, I hated those matches.
Boo! I liked it.
It's because it's so, I get it. But it devalues the title where, I mean, technically they don't really account for people. But, you know, there's people like Brian Kendrick who can say he was a WWE champion for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, but they're not counted as official champions.
But yeah.
They're not recognized as champions. You're not recognized as champion until that match actually ends.
But yes, the championship scramble is a match where I think it's like 30 minutes or what, 25, 30 minutes. And... basically, it's pinfall submission. Whoever scores the last pinfall submission before time expires is the winner and the champion of the match. And I think there was one year where Triple H won. Who won in like the last 10 seconds or something like that? Was that him or Jericho?
Jericho, I think. Yeah, Jericho came out because he replaced Randy Orton, punted CM Punk.
Oh yeah.
With the Great World Champ. Yeah, that's the one where CM Punk lost his belt. The greatest booking of a world champion since Rey Mysterio.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about that another time. But yes, it's...
Should we talk about, like, the women's matches that have happened? Okay. Like,
put anything in a pool, like mud, pudding, gel.
Bra and panties.
Judy Bagwell.
Gravy.
Lingerie, there's a lingerie match. Pillow fight.
Lingerie pillow fight, okay. Yeah.
I would just say this much. I prefer a lingerie match over the male alternative. The tuxedo match, because the tuxedo match is only ever used as a joke. Like, the first one I remember was, like, Howard Finkel versus Harvey Whippleman. And it's, like, the pastiest two white men you can find ripping off each other's kills. I don't want to see that.
What was the Pat Patterson versus Briscoe?
That was an lingerie match.
So you're not hearing wrong. This is grown men in lingerie matches. No, it wasn't in lingerie. It was an evening gown match.
Yeah, which is basically a lingerie match.
I suppose.
No, I think...
I guess technically it's a bra and panties match. Yeah. You have to strip off their clothes.
They're all variations on you have to strip people of their clothing.
Yeah.
Which they have abandoned, as you mentioned, because of...
PG.
PG. And also, the women can actually wrestle now. So.
Well, no, even back then, like, you'd have people like Trish and Nita in these matches, too, and they were... But, yeah, it basically did evolve from, like, the Sable era of women are nothing but tits and ass on TV, so how can we get them to be tits and ass and make a match out of it? I mean, because there were times where, like, there's literally a Sable versus Jackie match, which isn't a match but a bikini contest. And it's like, this is really, I mean, like, there's nothing here. It's not even, like, pretending. You just wanted to show her tits. Which would have been great if, even at that age, I knew it was super fake.
Right.
But yes, there was the hog pen match, which I think Vicky Guerrero versus Santina? Santino's sister.
Miss WrestleMania, don't forget.
Miss WrestleMania, yes. Yes, and they brought back all the stars for that.
Brought them all back. didn't know who anyone was until they got eliminated, because everybody came out after a 20-minute Kid Rock concert.
That you didn't notice until like halfway through was their intro.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
The 25th anniversary of WrestleMania.
They're on their 24th year. When did he say they'll get that right?
No, they're not going to. They're just going to see it. Either Vince doesn't give a shit.
I think they don't care, and I think they've realized that people won't care, because you say 30th, nobody's going to question them. But yes, it's not your 30th on your 29th year. What else? I mean, are there any other gimmick matches that you folks want to talk about before we begin to wrap this up?
I kind of wish that they brought... Not wish. Yeah, but they occasionally use the Three Stages of Hell match.
I prefer their... Oh, go on.
But it always depends on an escalation of the storyline. Some of these are storyline heavy. If there's no story, then they can't just do it. They're not going to have Dolph Ziggler versus Ryback in a Three Stages of Hell match. I mean, yeah, probably will. They'll be on the kickoff show.
But I like the Three Stages of Hell. It gives a 2 out of 3 falls match some variety, but I think it also has to be done well, because I think Cena versus Ryback was like a normal match, and then it was like a last man standing match, and then it was like a ambulance match.
Well, some of them never make sense. Like the order that they are, they don't make sense in that order. Like,
yeah, exactly. The one with, the original one made complete sense, because from the story standpoint of the characters, Stone Cold was a brawler, and he had to try to beat Triple H in a one-on-one straight-up fight. The second fall was a street fight, which was catered to Austin, and the third one was just because they hated each other, put them in a steel cage. Makes sense. Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit were kind of iffy. First fall was pinfall, second submission made sense, third was a ladder match, which is so-so. Then it just kind of gets stupid, because Shawn Michaels versus Triple H is a street fight, a cage match, then a ladder match. If you end with a gimmick match, don't put a gimmick match in between at the second fall, because it's like, oh, we're gonna lower the cage, we're gonna have a cage match, then we're gonna raise the cage and start a ladder match. That's just too much effort. Randy Orton versus Triple H was a singles match, a false count anywhere match, and then a stretcher match. And then John Cena versus Ryback. Again, who starts off with a lumberjack match? Then a tables match, then an ambulance match.
Nobody.
If you do like the first two, if it's like, okay, have a normal match, have some type of simple gimmick match, you know, something that's still one-on-one, but doesn't, and then you have a big gimmick match to end, and it makes sense. But if you have two or more gimmick matches in it, it just defeats the purpose, because it waters down the actual brand, the actual match. But yes, Battle Royals, I mentioned several times, are basically like Royal Rumble, except everybody starts at the same time. We've mentioned the Survivor Series enough when we talked about the actual Survivor Series match back in November. So, yeah, I think that's it. So, I mean, I guess before we go, any predictions on this weekend's Royal Rumble? Who will be the one?
I think that, and this is probably not going to happen, but I think you have a Dean Ambrose heel turn, and he takes the title and becomes the, like, Triple H's...
No.
That's the worst idea ever. Him and Roman Reigns, if you turn them heel, they should be their own man. They shouldn't join the Authority.
The Authority will
tolerate them, but they should be their own people.
It did nothing for Seth Rollins, really. And I think that's been the problem, is like the Authority has had to be the center stone of storytelling for like the past 2.5 years. And it's kind of gotten to the point where, like, They just swivel on whatever is needed. Like, the whole Seth Rollins storyline made no sense, because it's like, he's your champion, your handpicked champion. But every month it's like, oh, we're going to have to challenge you because you're improving yourself, even though you've beaten Cena, Brock, you know, Ambrose, Reigns, Orton. It's like, no. You really have to prove yourself this time.
Right. No. I mean, in my ideal world, the authority would go away, but I just don't see that happening anytime soon.
I don't know why. I mean, I guess in their heads, they think they're a ratings grabber, but it hasn't worked out that way.
Yeah.
And they're not, and my biggest problem with it is that Vince understood this in the Austin feud, is that it has to be not 50-50, but the guy has to get his comeuppance once in a while, where like, Stephanie can't get her comeuppance, and the one time she did, she beat Brie Bella, and then she left that feud. Triple H gets his comeuppance, but he goes, like, nothing matters to him. And then Xavier had his comeuppance once, and that was versus Daniel Bryan 2 years ago.
I think he definitely loses to The Rock, though, at WrestleMania.
I don't think he's going to... I hope they don't lose Triple H versus The Rock.
Oh, I think they definitely are.
I've seen that enough times in the Attitude Era, in every variation you can think of.
Yeah. What do you guys think? What do you think will happen?
Well, I mean, one, I would hope that... because this is... I mentioned before, like, one of the problems with the recent Royal Rumbles was just how it was booked with the winner. But I think another problem for me personally is, like, a lot of the Royal Rumble no longer seems to be the start of WrestleMania storylines. You look at some of the older ones, and, like, so-and-so would eliminate this person, that would start their beef. So I want to see mini-feuds start here. And I think the biggest one to come out of this would be who they're going to set Brock up with for WrestleMania. Because you can't... I don't think Brock's going to win the Royal Rumble. But if he doesn't win, how do you get him out of the match? Like, who eliminates him? Who would you put with Brock this year?
Yeah, it's a really good question if he's not in the main event.
The only person is, it would have to be Rock. And The Rock's not going to be at the Rumble.
And it doesn't seem like The Rock can compete
in the Rumble. He might be there, but he won't compete in the Rumble.
And it doesn't look like The Rock can wrestle at WrestleMania. They keep on trying. Like his insurance still don't want him to do it because last time he wrestled, he got injured.
They just announced that he'll be wrestling, or he'll at least be there.
No, they announced he'll be there, but they haven't said one way or they haven't said what he's going to do at WrestleMania yet.
Right.
I saw him at the house show, and if they kept him hot, I think Brock versus Sheamus would have been a good match. Maybe not a WrestleMania match, but that would have been a good match because Sheamus, you know, for all of his things on the mic or whatever, he's decent enough to go and look like a legitimate threat to Brock because he's a big guy. And Sheamus, because of his pale skin, takes a beating. His beatings just look really good because his skin gets all red and stuff. That's the problem with keeping the rest of the roster weak. It's like once you got rid of, like once Cena, Orton, Rollins, you know, all those people got injured, it's like who's there for Brock? Even if it wouldn't make any sense, like if somehow Bryan was cleared to wrestle and him and Brock would be, you know, that would be a big David and Goliath match. That would be fun, but that would have made more sense when Brock was a heel.
I still think it's going to be Brock versus Roman at WrestleMania, but
again, it's a rematch. It's a rematch of the year before. And
they never really had their...
So you say Roman wins the belt. Again, Roman retains in that Royal Rumble, because it can't be Roman going into WrestleMania chasing the belt for second year in a row.
I think that's
against the same opponent. Against the same opponent.
And I think the biggest risk you run with that is that you're going to have the same problem you had last year, where the audience wants to cheer Brock more than they want to cheer Reigns, and he's going to be the heel in that feud.
Yeah, it's like the whole problem with when they're too scared about, like, if they were ever scared about booking Cena versus Taker. Cena will always get booed at WrestleMania, and Undertaker will always be cheered at WrestleMania. So you just roll with that, but you don't want to do it with a guy who's part-time anyway.
Yeah, and a guy, and not for the guy who you want to make be the standard bearer, the face of your company for a few years, because it's just going to look bad if it's, people say what you will about Cena, but even in his first WrestleMania, his title win, he was cheered. And, you know, it was so beyond that, but yeah. And even more so, if you put Reigns with Brock, then what's the rest of the card?
it's Triple H versus Brock.
Well, then you have,
what's the one that people will want to see more? Triple H versus Rock or Roman versus Reigns? Roman versus Reigns. Roman versus Brock 2.
Well, honestly, I don't want to see either one of those.
I mean, I'd rather have Reigns versus Triple H.
I was going to say, I don't want to see Reigns versus Triple H. I mean, it makes sense. It's a new matchup. And Triple H is technically, I guess, the top heel right now, which is awful. Even if Roman Reigns is like their fifth top babyface or whatever. But yeah, it's like one of those I guess it's just in the past decade or so. But to me, WrestleMania has always been your biggest stars taking on each other. And it's like, if it's Reigns versus Triple H, sounds like a SummerSlam main event. Like, it's good, but it's nothing special.
I just don't think they have a lot of options.
And that's the problem. That's a problem. I mean, they have 2 months, and they could, if they wanted to, as they do at Reigns, if they want to get behind somebody and make them a star, they can do it in 2 months. That won't be a problem. The problem is they don't want to get behind anybody. And even like last year, I remember the WrestleMania card kept on changing, because for a while, it was going to be Daniel Bryan versus Dolph Ziggler in an IC title match. And
they made Daniel Bryan look like a joke in doing that. Go from world champion at one WrestleMania to intercontinental champion the next one.
Well, I mean, it's honestly not the worst. I mean, look at The Miz. The Miz went from being in the main event of WrestleMania to almost not being on the card the year after.
He really went from just about being in the main event, because it was always Cena and Rock, and then The Miz was just there holding.
Technically he was in the main event. Even though that's one of WrestleMania's, Anyhow, but yes, I imagine it's going to be Triple H who wins, and faces. My thing is, how do you get from A to B again? Because if you're a heel authority figure, and you don't want Roman Reigns to be champion, how does he get a title shot?
The powers that be that actually run the company, that sort of nonsense. The board of directors, that's what they've done in the past.
I said to say, it'll be like
against all odds at Fastlane thing, that he'll get into the main event somehow.
Yeah, but that's the problem. It's like, if they don't want him to win, don't put him in the match. That's always been the logical problems with, somebody points out, with Austin and McMahon, McMahon didn't want Austin to be champion, but he couldn't fire Austin because he understood that he made him money. And Vince has Vince has literally said that to Roman, but like, there's no reason to give him a shot at the title. You can make him part of your show without making him your champion.
Yeah. I don't know what they do. I mean, obviously, I think we all agree that getting rid of the authority would make it a lot easier. Because then you could have a commissioner that, says, here, you can have a shot if you win this match. Because he'll be like, you have to earn it. But if you do, it's not like, I don't want you to be champion. You have to earn it.
And WWE, if you listen to this, this is not an excuse to bring back the anonymous Raw general manager again.
I honestly would be happy with no authority figure for some time. They serve their purpose from time to time, but going old school, super old school, you get somebody like Jack Tunney or Gorilla Monsoon, where their big thing was always they'd come up when there was something beyond the scope of the usual, like when Ric Flair, when they decided the 92 Royal Rumble would be for the world title, it wasn't that Jack Tunney came out and screwed Ric Flair or screwed Hulk Hogan. He saw a situation and he made a judgment call. Where the authority, not only are the authority figures, they start the show every week, which always makes them seem bad at their job because they're planning their show at the start. It's like if you go to your job and your boss is like, okay, this is what we're going to do for the rest of the day at 10 a.m., it's like I should have an idea of what I want to do every week.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to change up Raw. I mean, that's a whole nother. I think that it would help getting rid of the authority would help Raw out too. But you know, it is just a shame that they can't. I don't know. It's funny because they do so well with NXT with.
I think one of the big differences between NXT and Raw is that NXT has the luxury of taping everything together, so they don't necessarily change with the win where it's like, okay, this worked last week, this doesn't, so we have to change it. Like, that's a good thing about WWE television is that they have that option. The problem is, it's like a lot of stuff is just so start and stop that fans just don't care after a while.
But also, it's also that NXT is only an hour long as well compared to Raw.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an hour long, and there are some weeks where the same people don't turn up every week, so...
Well, it's because there's only multiple episodes in a day.
Yeah.
Like, they could easily do a two-hour NXT. It'd just be two episodes back-to-back.
Yeah, because this was when Enzo and Cass were gone from television for, I think, a month or two. But I don't think NXT should ever, ever be 2 hours. 90 minutes at a push, and just leave it for the shows, the actual table, be whatever.
Yeah, I think an hour works for them. It's the same thing, like, if you go old school. That's how Raw and Nitro used to be. And Raw, it used to be like, okay, 1 week you get Dizu, and Undertaker, the next week you get Bret and Shawn or something like that. And it made sense in that, people weren't on the show week after week, which is sometimes a problem because in my head, it always drives me nuts that people in wrestling apparently don't interact with each other for an entire week. Like, something happens on Monday night and nobody talks to each other until Monday night the next week, or nobody sees... Like, you work in the same company, you go on...
And nobody watched the replay. Nobody watched the replay to make sure that they weren't getting the right end of the stick. Like, when tag teams break up and there's a giant Titantron there. And it's like, just look at the Titantron. They clearly didn't mean to do that. They were punched in the face, or they were blinded and they swung and hit you, something stupid like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, redonkulous. But we're over the hour and a half mark, so we're going to wrap it up. So this weekend, Royal Rumble 2016, one versus all, which is really what they're calling it, Roman Reigns defends the world title. And the only other match announced so far, this is recorded Monday before Raw, is Dean Ambrose versus Kevin Owens in the Last Man Standing match for the IC title. I assume there'll be more than two matches on the show. We'll see.
Are both of them not in the Royal Rumble?
I think they both will be.
So they have to do two matches?
They've done that before. I mean, have you seen the roster recently? I think they to get 30.
I'm surprised there's no women's match, no divas match, or tag team match.
Don't worry, the New Day will be fighting against either the Dudleys or the Usos or whatever team that they face 1,000 times in Raw and SmackDown every week. And the Divas match will be on the pre-show, and I won't care because I don't care about... I'm now at the point where I'm back to not caring about the women on Raw because Sasha Banks isn't champion, so...
She's hurt, so...
I would say I've actually enjoyed where they've taken the Becky and Charlotte storyline. It's an actual storyline, for one, and that's evolved beyond, oh, you know, you're my best friend, I was just looking out for you, to an actual feud where they both want to kill each other now. I like that. It's taken way too long for this Divas Revolution to actually bear fruit, but I think it's nice that, one, they broke up one of the stables. I thought it was stupid to have everybody come up in a stable.
The only reason Team Bella... they're still trying to force Team Bella, and one of them's not Bella.
Another one can't wrestle, so...
Yeah. Oh, God. Brimo! Misses a dropkick.
No, well, Nikki's hurt. And that's the other thing, is a lot of the Divas are hurt, too, so...
Everybody's hurt.
Like, everybody's hurt, yeah.
Call up Eva Marie.
But that's the problem. God. The problem with the Divas division shouldn't be that somebody's hurt, because there's more than enough females in the division, except most of them you don't care about, or they're off doing other stuff. Because, like, where's Natalya? Where's,
Natalya's injured.
Where's Cameron?
She's in NXT.
Yep. You can bring Eva Marie up to the main roster.
Yeah. No, that was...
Already everything.
She's the worst wrestler on NXT, so...
Yes. Have you seen Cameron?
Yes. Yeah, she's way better
Cameron
than...
Cameron is worse.
No, Cameron actually... No, she's not worse again.
Never forget when Cameron tried to do a pin on somebody's on back. Somebody's back. Granted, Eva Marie botched a kick out because apparently she forgot she was supposed to kick out in a match she was supposed to win. That was 1-on-1. But
okay, I mean, personally speaking, the worst thing to me about Eva Marie still is that she cannot do her finisher at all.
The person who trains her is the person that has done it the most in like the last decade, and even then she still can't pick it up.
Like, I'm not going to say she can't do it because she executes it, but it's done in such slow motion.
It's like, just push it out the way. How are you letting her do this move to you?
It's so awful watching it. It's like, I mean, honestly, like, at some point you're going to have to get confident in this move. You can't take 10, 15 seconds to do this move, or it makes the other person look stupid. Oh, she's running up the rope. Let me just stand here for a while and wait.
And let me help her up.
But yes, every time I see her do that, it just makes me cringe. But yes, that is it for Nerds on the Rocks this week. We'll be back next time, not talking about wrestling. I think the next time we'll be with you is the week before WrestleMania 32. And then I think that's mostly going to be about the card and the state of the WWE.
Cool.
So for Kyle and Dan the Third, this has been Pro Wrestling Gimmick Matches. Primo!